Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 22nd, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott the Funny One Long.
You are. I'm the straight man, apparently.
It's taken almost 10 years. Just before today's show, you finally acknowledged that you're the Abbott to my Costello.
I have alluded to it before. But
You've given up on this dream of actually being a funny human being.
I'm just going to sit here and be boring all the time now. No pressure, Scott.
And leaving the laughs and the yucks to me.
It's all up to you, man. I don't have it anymore. I'm getting too old for this.
Well, see, we had to start the show off with some levity because we got two hefty topics here to talk about.
Hefty.
That's well, in terms of the world of poker.
World of poker, yeah.
Poker's never hefty, right?
But right.
For our purposes, hefty. All right, so the first one, the trailer for Kid Poker, a documentary about, wait for it, Daniel Negreanu.
Yeah.
Has been released, so check that out. And it comes on the heels of Kid Poker's recent appearance at a Responsible Gaming Symposium, which Ante Up listener Kyle Fobe tells us created quite the firestorm on 2+2, and we depend on our listeners to tell us the what's creating firestorm on 2+2,
yes.
Because I'd rather have every one of my tooths ripped out than spend a minute on 2+2.
Did you say toots?
Yeah, the two toots.
Toots, okay.
Yeah, we're talking to my cousin Vinny. See, that's how you do comedy.
I know.
It's a callback.
All right.
All right, anyhow. His comments created this firestorm on 2+2. In short, Daniel was asked by a man who deals with teenage gambling addicts who want to be professional poker players what advice he'd give them. And Daniel laid out what could be considered a scared straight answer, illustrating the myriad things that one needs to consider before pursuing a career in the card-playing arts, including a hypothetical financial example that many poker players didn't take too kindly to. So what do we say?
I say I love it whenever a poker pro is a realist for us. That's one of the things that I am capable of doing is knowing the limitations of my ability to play this game. And I know that I am not a very good player. A lot of my family members like, oh, you could have made it. And I'm like, no. Yeah. No, I couldn't. And there are tons of reasons why, and I know the reasons why. But a lot of people see it on TV still, or they, you know, they just love the spotlight. If they think they're going to be on television, they love the idea of just outplaying people and making money and everything, and they don't really take the time to consider all the ramifications, especially young kids. They just, you know, they rush right into it, the impetuousness of youth, you know, and I just love it when someone says, hey, look, here's the reality of it, okay? Just because I'm doing it doesn't mean it's easy, you know, and right. It doesn't mean that there's no risk, and I appreciate stuff like that, and it's, I think it's interesting that they ask someone who's Kid Poker, who's not really a kid anymore. It's just call him Poker.
Just Poker.
But I really appreciate that he is truthful and cautious and tries to protect these people.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was a little surprised by... I shouldn't say I'm surprised by the Venom on 2+2, because that's all it is. But, I think this is one of these things that in our society that's a problem is that we tend to circle the wagons around our like-minded brethren, even when they do something wrong or something where they should be criticized for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, hey, we don't want... it's bad for poker if we criticize a poker player. But I don't think that's the case. We all know that there are extreme challenges in becoming a pro poker player, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have no desire to do it. Never had any desire to do it. And that's something you have either, mm-hmm. because we realize those things, right? So I think it's surprising that when a poker player that's been very successful comes out and says what I think we all really know in our minds. And the criticism he seemed to get was that, you know, hey, you're supposed to be this great ambassador of the game. So, and my takeaway from that is, so if he's supposed to be a great ambassador, that means he just makes it sound wonderful and great, like a Willy Wonka chocolate factory, and can never be honest about the downsides of the game. I think a true ambassador of the game is somebody who lays it out straight.
Absolutely. Here's the other thing, too, is he's trying to protect the game.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, that's a very good point.
Here is a guy who would completely benefit from people going willy-nilly into the game and right. taking all their hard-earned money, however they've earned it, and putting it on the table against him so he can get it and extend his career and make his life that much easier. So it takes a true ambassador to sacrifice his own income, potential income,
right.
all these fish that could come out and play against him and just literally just hand over their money to him to say, look, guys, step back for a minute. Because let's face it, you and I are ambassadors of this game. We produce a show, a website, a tour, and a magazine to promote this game. And we promote it from all angles. But the most important promotion that we do for this is the positive side of entertainment. That you're doing this magazine, you're playing this game, you're doing this show, you're listening to this show to be entertained. And if it's something you want to do for a career, well, then you need to listen to people like Kid Poker. And so this guy could have benefited so much from saying, oh, it's great, you need to try it. It's a great lifestyle, you got to come out here and do this, and you got to... And he would have benefited from it, from people getting misguided. And that is not an ambassador to this game. That is not. You need to protect the game and to protect the image of the game. So when people who are on the outside look at it and say, look at this guy, he's just trying to get as many people as possible into this game so he can fleece them. No, he didn't do that. What he did was be an upstanding human being, which is what poker players are. We're not thugs. We're not, you know, in the back alleys and dark rooms of, you know, no, we're people that everybody else, and we're playing poker and we're having fun and being entertained by it. If we want to do it for a career, just like any other career, you have to realize there are risks involved, and he did that. I think that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very good. And I think one of the other criticisms was as I mentioned, hypothetical financial example. You kind of used, you know, hey, go to your favorite poker room, find out what the players that are playing for a living make per hour at the game that you want to play, whether it's 1-2 no limit or 5-10 or whatever, right?
Right.
And then, you know, plan on about 60% of that because you're probably not as good as the best player in the room, right?
Right.
And then you know, start figuring about everything else. You know, you got to pay the travel. You got to pay rents. You know, you don't have another job that's giving you all that money that you have right now, right? And people just like, oh, his figure on how much you can make in an hour at the Bellagio was flawed. Well, okay, maybe it was, but he wasn't trying to be accurate with those numbers. I think he was trying to paint a picture of the calculations you need to make. Exactly. Those calculations are going to be different for everyone. So that seemed to me that people really get lost in that. I'm like, you know, you got to be able to see the forest from the trees, right?
Yes.
And these guys are focusing on the trees and freaking his overall message. And if he just left out all those numbers, it wouldn't have been as powerful of a conversation to the people that need to hear it.
The other problem, too, is the medium that they use. When you're talking about a forum, to me, I love forums for whatever they want to be for, but when you're trying to get down to the bedrock of a topic, it's almost impossible to do it in a forum. One guy will see one little thing. Some guy will correct your grammar. Some right. guy, and all of a sudden you're like, well, I went to school for 10 years. Well, school didn't do nothing. All of a sudden now they got a tangent over here about because you went to school and you majored in English. You know it's without an apostrophe S. And so now you've got 10 guys talking about that. Then one other guy says, oh, look at Negreanu's numbers are wrong. You can make more money at the Bellagio. Oh, well, I was at the Bellagio. Well, yeah, but that's the Bellagio you know when I was at the Bellagio. Now all of a sudden you're not even talking about the topic anymore.
Right.
So while I love forums for the community they can produce and the way they can rip apart a subject, for the most part, you can't get anything done in a forum other than just frustration and like you said, flames. And it's just crazy to me that people look to that stuff for their guidance. You know, okay, you might glean from it what you will, but don't ever look at it and then pick apart one. You just ruined the thread. You've totally ruined the thread. And so you got to take them with a grain of salt, those forums, too.
Absolutely. All right. Well, speaking of tough love, Philly.com recently posted an interesting interview with female pro Jessica Dolly, who was asked what could be done to get more women to play poker. Her to-the-point advice for women, quit using your sexuality to get ahead in poker. Instead, use the same tools men do, independence, intelligence, and confidence. So what do we think about this?
Oh, I disagree. I totally disagree. Now,
are you being serious?
Yes, I'm being serious.
Oh, this is going to be a good...
I don't mean that they shouldn't use independence, intelligence, and confidence. Of course they should. But do you not use everything at your disposal when you play poker?
Oh, wow. This is going to be a fun discussion.
Well, do you not use the gift of gab if you're good at it? Do you not get players to reveal things if you're good at it? I'm not saying that's all they should do. I'm not saying they should pull a... Jennifer Tilly type dress or something. What I'm saying is that you do everything you can in this game to glean information in a game that's full of incomplete information. You do everything you can to get better at the game, and you do everything you can to basically make money. Now, I'm not saying that they need to, you know, do something that's, you know, against their personal taste or whatever their integrity is. But to me, if that would get you to get some guy to fold, or to, you know, if you're in the big blind and he folds a small blind because you've been talking to him and he likes you or whatever, it's just a conversation that you're having, and I don't see why they should get rid of it altogether. I'm not saying that's all they should do, right? You know, because you said quit using it. Why would you quit using it? That's a huge part of who you are. If it works for you and these guys are doing what you want them to do, you're going to make more money. I mean, but it's not at the expense of independence, intelligence, and confidence. It's to complement it.
Well, I think that's kind of our argument, and that it's a good debate to have, is that, you know, when you're trying to get respect at the table, which I think is what her overall point was, is you need to be respected at the table to feel comfortable at the table, that when you're sitting there batting your eyelashes, and this goes for men too, you know, if you're a suave-looking man,
right,
at the table, and, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not a woman versus man thing. But you don't get respect by being attractive, I don't think. And I think most people would agree with that. I think you get respect for these other things that we're talking about. Now, is it a tool at your disposal that you could use to be successful? Sure. But it's not going to get you respect at the table. And your larger point here was that women feel intimidated playing poker, which we've always known, right? That's always been the thing.
Right.
And that's why we have, you know, the ladies' events and things like that, you know, get them in comfortable with other like-minded people. And then hopefully they get the confidence to go out and play, you know, in a mixed field and feel confident. And I think her point is that, you know, when you're flirting, you're not getting confidence. You're not using the things that make you a confident person. So if instead you focus on the things that will make you feel like a confident person, then you're going to be more confident, and that's what's going to get more women in.
Okay, so maybe it's a little
misconstrued. And I guess the flip side of it is, too, I mean, hey, not all of us are blessed with the great looks that I am, you know. So, you know, it's kind of this reverse thing where if you're a woman and you know, you don't find yourself very attractive, and you're going to like, well, guys aren't going to find me attractive, and that's the only way you can be a successful poker player is to be this cute blonde with, you know, that flirts. And I'm not going to do that, and I can't do that, so I'm not going to play. And that's definitely the wrong message, I think we can agree on, right?
Yeah, no, but I think the initial question was, what could be done to get them to play poker? Just to play it, not to get better at it. That was
right,
the, so
and,
I'm
and
saying,
I think her underlying point is it's instilling confidence. Now, I mean, there might be other ways, obviously, but that's her point, is instilling confidence, and she just doesn't think that, you know, the approach that some women are taking is not confidence boosting for themselves, or especially for other women that may not be quite as attractive.
I think that when you're, if you're at the table, and let's say you're a good-looking guy or a good-looking woman, and you have a good-looking guy or a good-looking woman on your right, and you're having a conversation with them, and they show the penchant for being a nice person to you because of that conversation or because of that flirting or whatever, and they fold to you, you've picked up information about the type of person this person is. It's not just, true. It's not just, hey, because I flirted with him, he's going to fold to me, so I'm going to continue to do this all the time. It's more like, okay, I flirted with this guy. He seems to be susceptible to not only my charms, but to people that take a shining to him or whatever. So now, later on in the match, when we have a big moment, he's going to remember that we were friendly, even if it's like 2 hours later in the tournament, we've changed tables 5 or 6 times, and then I come up on a table and him again, now he's across from me. He's going to know, hey, I remember her, she was nice, we were cool, and blah, blah, blah. So it's not just sexual. It could be a lot of things that you can glean
right.
from that.
I think maybe we're saying the same thing, is that you know, no one's saying not to use all the tools at your disposal. I think her point was that she thinks that too many women use, you know, their looks as a crutch at the expense of these other things. And these women could be very intelligent, confident women, but for some reason they feel like they need to be a different person at the table.
Yeah, that I agree
to
with.
Get respect.
I think
that's the point.
Yeah, that I agree with. I would say don't make that the reason that you do well in poker only, or don't make that the reason to give up on the other things because you do so well with doing that one facet, because that's not going to get you very far in the long run. And for men too. I mean, it's both ways. It's not
right.
just women, but because she was asked, that's why we're addressing it that way. I agree. I mean, you know, but I would say that if there's anything that you can do to get information from somebody that's you're comfortable with doing, then and it's not grossly gratuitous or whatever.
Yeah,
then
well, it's a micro macro discussion we're having here.
Yeah,
the macro is how do you get them to the table. The micro is how you are successful once you're at the
once
table.
You're at the table, exactly. Interesting.
Yeah,
wow, this is a strong lead to our show today.
Yeah, pretty weighty show.
Feels like a news program.
Gonna have to yuck it up here a little later on. All right, well, if you're going to be in Vegas this summer, don't miss the Annie Up Poker Tour Series at Gold Nugget Las Vegas. It kicks off next week, May 27th, runs all the way through July 3rd. I'm going to be out there for most of it, so come down and say hi. You can get all the details at antiupmagazine.com/goldennugget, but the highlights include 11 100K guarantee events, a 500K guarantee main event that will land you on the cover of Antie Up, 16 non-hold'em events. Also, you know, I have to mention this too because I have a lot of listeners have been emailing me. They're going to be going out to the series for the Colossus, the World Series, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminding all of them, and most of them know, but a couple of them haven't and been happy to know. You know, if you play the Friday events at the Colossus, Saturday is additional flights, so you're not playing the Colossus on Saturday. Come on down to the Nugget, and it's a $350 buy-in tournament with a 100K guarantee on Saturday. Sam purposely planned the schedule that way to get people that so you can play two really big events that weekend. So, and also quickly at 7 p.m. on May 28th at the Mirage, Antiup Ambassadors and others will be playing in a 3-6 limit mix game. So a little kind of a mini meetup, and certainly all Antiup fans are invited to show up for that and play. And then I'm going to try to put together another meetup the weekend of June 27th. And once we get the details on that, we'll let you know. But that will probably be down to Gold Nugget to get you guys to come down and play some Antiup Poker Tour events.
Very cool. Hey, you know, our 10th anniversary is coming up.
Hadn't heard.
Yeah, it'll be June 15th. And, you know, we want to know how we should mark that milestone. So send your thoughts to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post them on our Facebook, Twitter pages or in the Antiup group discussions on pokerradius.com.
And it's time to cast your ballot in the Antiup's MPD Most Popular Dealer Contest. Go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD and vote for up to 3 dealers in each of 5 regions. All voters are automatically entered into a drawing to win one of more than 400 prizes from our sponsors. Remember, voting's open through July 8th, but do not wait. Vote today.
Okay. Each week... oh, go ahead.
You, iPhone users, yeah, and yeah. Turns out all Apple... All you idiots that buy Apple products... You're going to have to go into Safari and allow cookies. You're not going to be able to vote. So go ahead and do that. And then go out and buy an Android.
Please. All right. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from our ambassador, Michael Young. And he says, I recently advanced to day two in an event, and he wants to know how he should have approached it. The average was around 83,000, and he had 52,000. Should I have played tight, insane, or something in between? How do you go into an event that you have squiggly 25 big blinds when the blinds are starting back up at 1,000, 2,000 with a 300 ante?
Yeah, he mentioned that this is a new trend, these two-day tournaments, and you're getting them in smaller events rather than just the big circuit events.
Right.
So people don't have a lot of experience playing day two. So you're coming back, usually you're playing 4 hours, and you do some stupid chop, and you go home and watch Matlock, right?
Right.
So I guess my question, I'm curious what you have to say, obviously, why do we need to change what's been working for us? I mean, obviously, we're below average in chips, right? So, but I don't think there's necessarily a shift that we need to make in day two from day one. I mean, it's almost a psychological break, isn't it?
It is, because it's the same tournament.
Yeah, the limit's going to go up one way or the other, right? You just now had 12 hours to go home and get a snack and shower and sleep, right?
Right.
So, obviously, I guess you're in a different frame of mind, so it's not completely the same. Maybe that's it, but from the actual poker perspective of it, I don't think it changes at all that it's a day two versus continuing on day one.
I completely agree. If it was one of those, what are those, freeze-outs? What are the ones where, no, the shootouts, where you start over with all
right.
same, that's different. But this is, like Scott said, imagine if this you just took that 12-hour period out. And just we're still playing the tournament. That's all it is. The only thing is that you're refreshed and wide-eyed. Other than that, why change what we've done? I mean, besides 25 big blinds is still plenty, you know, to just play your game anyway. You know, I wouldn't change my game until I had to. And
yeah, I guess if we're talking about the poker side of it here, I mean, and the fact that we took the break, I mean, psychologically, I would think that a bunch of players don't want to take 12 hours off, come back the next day, and be out in the first hand, right?
Right.
So there's probably a case to be made from a psychological standpoint of being aggressive early on day two, while people are not really back in the mode of playing it or not eager to go out. So that might be the only strategy I can think of there. And the fact that you have 25 big blinds, you're right, you're comfortable but not greatly comfortable. So, you know, you can be aggressive there, and, you know, if you double up then just once and you're above average, then you can go back in your shell for a little bit if you're more comfortable there.
Yeah, and just, you know, temper that aggressiveness, knowing that you are only half the average stack right now. So don't want to be aggressive with somebody with an average stack, they can knock you out. So you want to be careful what you're doing with that as well. But really, yeah. It is just the same tournament.
Yeah, well, I would think good position and decent cards, you could be shoving there, and people are just going to be folding. I don't think you're going to get a lot of pushback and, you know, hey, pick up. You do that, you're picking up 3,000 plus almost 6,000
at
the full table, right?
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference there. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I guess that would be my advice there.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home to the Anteup group discussions. Comes from Anley in Scotland. Says, I was in a daily tournament at a local casino. On the river, player A checks, player B bets, and player A calls. Player A was in the motion of showing his cards when player B mucks. Player A then declares that since the other player mucked, he does not need to show his cards. The dealer seems fine with this, and no players object, so the chips are pushed to the player. Later, I questioned the rule, and two or three players informed me that this was a new rule at this chain of casinos, where if one player chooses to muck at showdown, the other does not need to show. Is this a new standard rule that is being applied everywhere? Or have you seen this anywhere before? Can you see what the intended benefit to this is? I thought that in a showdown situation, both sets of cards should be turned over, or a player can choose to muck, but the cards must be turned up if a player requests them to be. Surely this rule could only aid collusion or chimp dumping?
First of all, we're happy to welcome Elliot, who's been on the show in the past. He's taken over for Sam, who is moving on outside of poker. So we thank Sam for his contributions and look forward to answers from Elliot going forward.
Yes.
All right, so Elliot says, from the TDA rules, rule number 16, showdown order. In a non-all-in showdown, cards are not spontaneously tabled. The tournament director may enforce an order of show. The last aggressive player in the final betting round must table first. If there's no bet on the final street, then the player who would be first to act in the betting round must table first. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. Except warehouse policy requires a hand to be tabled during the order of show. A player may elect to muck his hand face down. Now, he says, the rule regarding the situation from the tournament in Scotland that you described was agreed upon at the previous summit of the TDA. In order to bring more of the game of poker to tournament poker, it was decided that players who felt they were caught bluffing could muck without showing, and the caller could win without showing, just as in a cash game. I see your point regarding collusion via chip dumping, and we will see if the TDA can revisit this precise situation at our next gathering in hopes of modifying it. Let's face it, cash poker and tournament poker are different games and activities at this point in time, and the rules are supposed to account for that. All this being said, the hand you described was conducted according to current TDA rules.
Yes, yes. And it's funny because I've always thought that was the rule anyway. I didn't realize it was a recent change. I thought that was always
rule. I totally forgot. I was at the summit the last time, and I have a pretty good memory of everything we talked about at that, but I did not remember this at all.
So. Yeah, and it's funny because Doc, our good friend, Frank, I think he called me or texted me. No, I think we did in a text. And he's like, hey, and he described almost the exact situation, and he disagreed with it. He's like, I think he disagreed with it. He's like, shouldn't he have to show his cards? And I'm like, no, there's not an all-in here. And the guy got caught, and as long as he wasn't the last aggressive guy, and even then, a lot of times they're like, good call, you win, and he keeps the hands down until the other guy shows a winning hand, then he mucks or something.
Right,
and
right.
Sometimes they even get away with that, but no, this is how it's always, I thought it's always been this way, but maybe just recently they've finally said, hey, we're going to put it in writing.
The other thing that I kind of want to chat quickly about, because our friend Nick, who corrected us on the call for on last week's show, right?
Right.
I'm really enjoying going back and forth with him on emails, and he's adamant that cash game poker and tournament poker are two different animals. And I got to say, I don't really agree with that, but Elliot here certainly agrees with him on that. So do you? I mean, obviously, I know the mechanics of it are slightly different, but I don't think they're vastly different animals. I think rules should be fairly consistent between the two, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't think they're vastly different. They are different. There are situations that are come up that wouldn't make sense in a cash game that makes sense in a tournament, because you can constantly go back into your pocket to play this game. So there's a rule that would affect tournament poker. There are only so many chips in play, and we're all playing for those chips, and it involves everyone in the room for those chips.
Okay.
So
that's a good point.
But other than that, no, you're right. I think that as far as like the actual structures and stuff like that and all that kind of thing, not structures, tournament structure, I mean as in the structure of the actual game of poker, yeah, they should be very similar in the rules and in the way they're doing things. I agree with you there, 100%. I think that they're the same game. They're all playing cards. It's just there are some things that apply to one situation that don't apply to others, so you have to have the separate rules. That's about all I got to say.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? We got new O'Malley's move. Let's kick it off.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing in a $1, $2 PLO8 home game. We're fairly new to this home game in particular, and only know one of the players fairly well. However, the table has been friendly, and the players seem pretty decent. The table is six-handed. The blinds post, the +1 calls, the cutoff calls, and we're on the button with the ace of spades, 9 of hearts, 8 of hearts, tray of spades. I like this hand. We're double suited, and while the 9-8 isn't the best combo, we could hit some nut straights with that. Plus, we have a suited ace with another wheel card. We don't know the players very well. The game has only been going for roughly 30 minutes, but so far it's a pretty conservative table. We sit with our original buy-in of $400, and we decide to change the tone a little bit. We make it $12 to go. The big blind calls, as does the cutoff, and we're going to a flop with about $35 in the pot. Bingo! It comes down the 10 of spades, 7 of clubs, 6 of diamonds. We flop the nut straight and have a pretty decent low draw with backup runner-runner to the nut flush. It's checked to us, and we decide to make a bet. Without really thinking things through, we put in $20. Perhaps that's a little low? We get the big blind to fold, but the cutoff calls, and we see a turn with $75 in the pot. The turn is the four of spades, and our opponent wastes little time in putting $40 into the pot. So, did he hit his nut low? This card brings us a myriad of other outs. What's the play here?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time. Homer Poker instructional videos online. Antiup listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And this comes from Andy Castro. And, I think we need to pause here and just talk about how awesome it is that U.S. and Cuba are forging new relations, and that Andy now feels welcome and open to email us here at Andy Up.
Oh, man, that's why you're the funny one.
I know our good friend Andy is actually from Atlanta, Georgia, and he's emailed us before, and so let's see what he has to say this time. All right, so he was down our way here in Florida on a business trip, actually Southern Florida, which is actually not even close to us, not right. Even the same state.
Such a big state.
But he was down there playing, and he says that they were running a promotion of a $300 high hand payout every half hour. Oh, yeah, welcome to Florida. So every hand would have 5 to 6 players see the flop. The high hand has to be aces full of tens or better. I had a pretty tight image at this table, as I had not played many hands over the last 2 hours. Beginning this hand, I had about $180, and we're playing 1-2 no limit, 9-handed. I was on the small blind with ace-10 of diamonds. The under the gun folds, +1 raises the 10. 3 players, including the button, call, and is on us in the small blind with the Cosenza, ace-10 of diamonds.
I'll call. That's all I have to say. I mean, really, I can't expound upon that. I'm not going to raise there because I know I'm going to give away. I got a guy who's pretty early in position raising. I'm not going to go to battle with ace 10 unless I see a flop, you know, just because I love the hand to make, you know, Faso upset doesn't mean that I'm going to play it aggressively because it's just happened to be a hand that people tag my name to once in a while. But that seems to be the right call to me. You got a suited ace. It's not a huge ace. It's a decent ace. You can make Broadway with it. But you got so many people in the hand. I don't want to open it up to betting again, have the under the gun +1, and then make it 100 to go. I've got all these other guys out, and then what are we going to do? Go to battle with ace 10 out of position? Of course not. So I'm just going to call. I'm not going to fold, though.
Right. I think, but here's the thing. If you're going to call here, I think you need to be realistic about what you're looking for. I mean,
yes.
This is, again, the situation why, you know, I'm not a big fan of ace queen anymore, because you could be outkicked, and ace 10 is way worse than ace queen. So I'm playing it because, I'm hoping to hit hard, and hard is going to be 2-pair or better here. And 2-pair or better without a king or queen on the board as mm-hmm. well. You know, it needs to be a solid, 2-pair for me. And then to a smaller degree, I think that this promotion he's talking about is going to play into that a little bit, but to a very small degree, because we're not talking about a bad beat jackpot where, you know, you could be buy a house.
Right.
Hit right. We're talking about $300, and this hand's probably going to cost us more than $300 if it gets to that point, right? So, right. I'm not playing any ace-10 just to hit $300 in a 1-2 game. So, but that being said, it's nice to know that it's out there.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Our hero says, "I call as well with plan to proceed with caution as I was going to be out of position the whole hand." All right. Stop for a round of applause. Let's see if he sticks with it. Hand okay. of the week, so
yeah, you never know.
We don't have a high degree of faith in sticking that. All right, the big blind calls as well too. So 6 of us to a flop. Again, welcome to Florida poker, folks. She said we should get him his comment at the table. Comment at every table in Florida.
Man.
Okay, so the flop was the Jack of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds, Trey of Spades. All right, so we flop a royal flush draw here.
That's true.
And, of course, we're first at with 47 people in this pot, or 6.
You know, I can go a lot of ways with this, but I really feel like if I bet and that under the gun has something like a set of queens, set of jacks, or an overpair, he's going to raise. And I'm not going to get $180 in the middle.
And then make it really expensive on a draw,
make it
right?
expensive on a draw. So I'm going to check and see what kind of price. Generally, on under the gun +1, if he follows through like he normally would and bets, we're going to lose half this field at least. And it might be something for $30, $40. And I think I can, with $180 in front of me and with a royal flush draw and a high hand promotion, and even a Broadway draw, because it could still just be a Broadway.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we've got a lot of stuff here that can really make our hand be disguised and worthy. So I think I'm just going to check and see how it plays out until it gets back to me. I really don't want to go crazy here with just a draw.
Yeah, I think there's two ways you could do it. You could donk bet into this and try to set the price and hope you don't get raised and keep... And then if you do that, and even if you pick up four or five callers, now you're building a pot for you to hit your hand. Mm-hmm. And if we hit our hand, it's going to be the nuts here. I mean, we're not going to be excited with an ace peels off here. You know, we want that diamond or that king, right?
Right.
So I'm not so opposed to that. I'm just not so sure that donk bet's going to not get raised. And particularly, you know, with this many people in, I think if anybody has even a queen in their hands, you know, ace queen is probably going to raise you here, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm not interested in getting that money in on a draw. So I'd rather check and see how this hand develops.
Yeah, well, we agree.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Our hero decides to bet $30 into the $53 pot. The other gun plus one calls and the button calls. And so we're three-handed now, so we lost three players. He says the other gun plus one had him covered, but the button had about 95 left after making the call.
Right. That's interesting, isn't it? We bet and they just call.
Yeah, it wasn't a raise, so yeah. In that case, I'm actually slightly happy about it. But I think the other problem with betting out here now is now we have to... I mean, what do you do on the turn now?
Yeah, especially if you miss.
You got to keep the pressure up, right? Now, what's great about this is if we hit our hand on the turn, right?
Yeah.
Now we can continue the bet, and then people aren't going to believe us, because they're not going to believe that we bet on a draw there, right? And then maybe get raised. But if we don't hit, now we're forced to put a bet in here again. If we get called on the turn, then what do we do on the river? Now we shut down the river, and then somebody shoves on us?
Yeah, because if you check now, they're floating you, and they're going to steal it. If right. they don't have anything, and they do have something, they're going to say, oh, so you were trying to steal it, or you were betting a draw, now I'm going to shut you out of this hand. So... It's such a precarious thing to be out of position.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of really the problem with that dunk bet on the flop. It puts us in a position now where we had to keep up the aggression or give up and become a calling station, which is even worse, I think.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see what happens. The turn was the five of clubs. So our board now is jack of diamonds, queen of diamonds, tray of spades, five of clubs. Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. So the thing is now I'm upset because I have to play it the way Andy played it. Not the way we would have played it. And it's killing me to know that there's basically, 140 in this pot now? And to make a proper bet, if you're going to bet, you're going to have to bet like almost 100,
yeah,
like 80
to
or something.
Yeah, yourself from it,
yeah.
Right?
And you don't have anything. This is why you never want to play hands out of position and you want to hit
ace
them hard.
High.
Yeah, you have ace high right now. So... The interesting thing was the street earlier, these guys merely called. Now...
Yeah, you know what? I'm not to interrupt your point, but I'm wondering, had we checked, whether it would have checked around.
Yeah, and if
probably
also,
not, but if it would have, wouldn't that have been interesting?
The other thing, too, then, is if they were so inclined to just call, then maybe they'll be happy to see a check behind, too. Who knows? So maybe we check... Not check behind, but maybe we check so they can check behind... Who knows?
Yeah, maybe everybody's going to draw here.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe everyone's just a little timid right now, and they're happy to only call 30 to see a free card. Five didn't help them, so they'll be happy to see a river for free, maybe. So you can take that advice. I mean, it feels like normally when you're playing poker, somebody just calls you, and someone else just calls, there's going to be a float in there somewhere. But I'd rather do that than risk $80 to have nothing on the end again. So... Let's check and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't want to follow one mistake by making another one here. So
plus pot control.
Maybe it's a mistake to check here, but I think it's a bigger mistake to put more money into this pot.
Yeah, let's not compound that.
Or at least be the aggressor in putting money in the pot, I should say. All right, our hero decides to go all in.
Whoa.
He says, as I was not going to fold if I bet out and got raised. He says, I figured I had to have some fold equity against anyone holding a jack or a queen with a bad kicker. I gotta say, it's bold.
Wow. That's,
Problem is, anybody has something and they don't believe you. Again, this is Florida, remember, so you got six people that came to this flop.
Wow.
It's really tough to squeeze them out of this pot, I think, so...
Yeah, it's easy to bluff one person, it's not easy to bluff two. Not that he's bluffing, but he's sort of semi-bluffing, to quote Sklansky, but, that's still... I mean, he's got outs. He's got outs.
Right, right, exactly. So if he does get called, he has plenty of outs, actually.
This is how I used to play. I don't do this that much anymore. I'd be scared to do that because one of these guys, okay, if one was floating, then okay, you're probably going to get him out. But the other one, he can't be floating too. Maybe he could be. Maybe he could be. Who knows? But
possible.
But it doesn't make sense if player A is floating.
But here's the thing. Yeah, we're hoping that
player
they have
B
nothing,
isn't floating. Right? Yeah, we have
so
to hope that.
Fold. So if they have nothing and we check, it's the same result, I guess, other than we don't win the pot. Now we got to win, make a bet on the river. So, I don't know.
And you're betting 180 to win 140.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't seem right. You're hoping that somebody calls and you win. But you don't want them to call. You want to shut it down now and take that 140 back of what you put in, you know, a bunch. So it doesn't seem like a positive EV play to me at all. I would have just checked.
All right. So he says, let's see. All right. So he figured that on the gun plus one folds, and the button calls for his last 95. So at least we're not all in now.
Right, that's cool. At least it's only, which is what you should have made the bet for anyway, roughly, if you're going to bet. So you're not doing too poorly now.
Let's see. River, six of hearts.
Ugh.
So we totally miff final board, jack of diamonds, queen of diamonds, tray of spades, five of clubs, six of hearts. And her hero says, I thought for sure I lost as I only had ace high. But following your and Chris's advice of always tabling your cards, I did just that. Turned my cards over, convinced I'd lost a hand. I thought for sure the button had at least a pair. The button looked at my cards, then looked at the board, then looked at its whole cards, then looked back at the board, and did this several times. It seemed like 10 minutes, but it was probably only a minute or so. Eventually, he threw his cards in the muck. I was surprised. The only hand that had made sense after seeing this fold was King Nine of Diamonds, which I asked if that's what he had, and he said it was. Don't know if I believe it or not.
Yeah, I was thinking that he had King Ten and not the Ten of Diamonds, just a King Ten or something like that, because at least he'd be open-ended, you know, for a losing hand, I mean. King Nine, okay, so you're going for the second nut flush draw and then the gut shot straight flush, but, the second nut hand.
Terrible call.
Terrible call. That's, why is he calling? But he had to have a whole
hand. You don't even have the nuts. You don't even have the nut draw. Though.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's bad enough, I think, calling with a nut draw. Calling with less than a nut draw your entire stack. Wow.
Wow.
That's why people flock to Florida to play, folks.
I was going to say, that's why they move here. People like that. That's pretty bad call. King Nine of Diamonds, too. That's very specific. Anyway, so he called this guy with King Nine on the button calls a raise.
Well, first of all, yeah, he calls a raise, right?
The King Nine, yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Calls a bet, a pretty decent bet on the flop, and then calls off the rest of his chips on the turn.
And I wrote down high hand promotion, thinking, you know, hey, this might come into play, but it never really did.
Yeah. We're not for the loser of the hand here, so.
Yeah, wow.
Hey, Andy, well, I'm glad our state showed you some great hospitality. Please come back and share it with the rest of us sometime.
Yeah, sure. Don't worry about coming across that 90-mile channel there anymore now. You're welcome here. You're welcome here, Andy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.